Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, or good evening, depends where you're listening from. This is Sports Betting Tips with Chris Sheridan, episode number 26, Carmelo Anthony's Future. And I'm joined on the air by a guy I've known for a long, long time. He's been covering the Houston Rockets since John Lucas was playing for them, and maybe prior to that, or maybe that's saying too much. But Jonathan Fagan from the Houston Chronicle is our guest today. John, thanks for coming on the show, and let's get right to it. We ran into each other last weekend in San Antonio when the night that Carmelo Anthony disappeared, and he was out with the flu, except it really wasn't the flu. It was something else, but we now have Carmelo Anthony in a state of limbo, and everybody around the NBA is wondering, okay, what's going to happen next? Where's this guy going to end up? And I'll let you take it from there, John, but what's going on with Carmelo Anthony?
Well, the Rockets and he just, they didn't fit on the court, but it also got to the point where, you know, he was willing to come in and be the backup to P.J. Tucker. He understood that if he's going to play for Mike D'Antoni again, he's going to be a four. And if he's going to be on the Rockets, he's going to be a backup to Tucker. And he was okay. You know, James Ennis was starting at the three. Well, he's now a four at this stage of his career and where he's playing in the Rocket system, so he's okay with that. After the Rockets' bad start and after they just laid an egg in Oklahoma City, scored 80 points, they decided, okay, we've got to move the rookie up, Gary Clark, give him the greater role in the rotation because he's a good defensive player, he's a smart defensive player, very active. He's a 3-and-D guy with potential to improve, as you would expect of a rookie. Well, Carmelo didn't sign up to be a backup to the backup, and not to mention to be playing behind a guy who's an undrafted rookie playing on a two-way contract. Mm-hmm. He was a real good soldier about his role here. You know, he never complained about it. He acknowledged it's a challenge, I'm adjusting, that kind of thing, but he never really complained. But the Rockets did not think that was going to be a long-term fit with him picking up spare minutes here and there. So that's about when they decided, well, we're going to step back and spend a few days talking it over. They had not decided in San Antonio, this is absolutely done. You know, they in other words, they were still kind of weighing, do they keep him on the team? They could use the depth, even on if he's not playing, things happen, things change, or just need to cut and move on. He was sick. You know, half the team was sick, so I would think he was. I saw him at practice on Friday in San Antonio, and he looked awful. I didn't interview him, but I interviewed James Harden, who sounded horrible. So he actually was sick, for whatever that's worth. Obviously, he recovered. You know, we're not holding any telethons, but they continued to call him out with an illness and moved on. And so now Carmelo needs to move on. He needs to figure out where this stage of his career can work. The fit in Houston was picked in part because of his friendship with Chris Paul, in part because they were a team that recruited him for years, and because they were the best team of those that were pursuing him. At this stage, he probably just needs to go somewhere that he can be mellow, that he can go do what he does, hope it's with a good team, get the best one he can, but also consider, where can he go and do what he does best?
Mm-hmm. And so he's in somewhat of a state of limbo. He's a guy who signed a contract over the summer, so he can't be traded until December 15th. He can be waived, though, and he can be waived at any time. What do you foresee happening, Jonathan, as far as whether they're going to wait till December 15th or whether they might waive him or whether they might – you know, what are their options?
Well, they're free to do whatever they need because they have the extra roster spot. They only had 15 on the roster. So even when Gary Clark, the rookie that surpassed him in the rotation, even when he uses up his 45 days on the two-way contract, his contract can convert to a standard NBA deal, but they have a roster spot for him. So they don't have an urgency to do it. When Carmelo's agent, Leon Rose, finds a landing spot, he would then turn to the Rockets and say, okay, waive him now. And they will. He'll clear waivers because it's against the rules to sort of make a waiver deal. You can't In other words, say the Kings wanted to pick him up. They can't call Daryl Morey and say, waive him, we'll pick him up. That's not allowed. So he would clear waivers, be a free agent, and sign if that happens. If it doesn't and you get to December, well, his contract could be used in a larger trade. Obviously, there's not teams offering a whole lot of assets for him. Otherwise, you know, they could waive him already and they would, you know, a team can get him without offering assets. So they're not going to just do it because they like the Rockets. But he could be used in a larger trade, or the Rockets could sweeten the deal, trade Melo along with a future second, and then they would get the tax savings because the Rockets are a pretty heavy-paying tax team. So those are things that would happen. I would suspect that it won't take that long, that eventually they will find a team that is ready to pick him up, and the Rockets will waive him to make that happen. For now, it doesn't cost them anything just to keep him on the roster because they have the room for it, and it sort of saves them the indignity of being waived, not picked up, and not signed, and just be an unsigned free agent for a while. I don't know that that seems to me to be splitting hairs, but it also seems to be what Melo's people want. So they're just going to keep him around until he's got a place to go.
Mm-hmm. And what would prevent somebody, if he was waived, what would prevent somebody from just putting in a claim on him and upsetting the apple cart, so to speak?
Well, they could. And there's a threat to that as well, which maybe would be a reason to wait until you can trade him. But I'm told that's not it, and there's not a concern that there aren't teams with interest. And so they're not lying to Leon. He's a minimum contract guy. There's no reason to lie. They're not going to say, no, we don't want him, and then have him go on waivers and grab him. So I'm told that's not the reason. But I was thinking, like you were, that, well, maybe that's why they're not waiving him, because he doesn't want to get picked up by some team where he does not want to go. I'm told that's not the concern, that it, once they find a place, they will waive him.
Yeah, I've reported, and I have solid intel that the Philadelphia 76ers are interested. They're kicking the tires on the idea. They're a little bit worried about Carmelo going in and being a ball stopper because their offense is based so much on movement. They actually led the NBA in passes last season. People track this stuff, and the Philadelphia 76ers threw more passes than any team in the NBA last year. And Melo could be a fit there because – even though he's not a great defender, he can spot up in the corner and get passes from Ben Simmons. And if he's not able to guard his man, there is a nice second line of defense in Joel Embiid. But the Sixers, are for the time being, are saying, let's just wait and see, wait and see, wait and see. Because guys get hurt and guys become available, especially at the power forward spot, where a guy who looks unavailable a week ago all of a sudden is available a week later because of circumstances surrounding his team. So it sounds like, Jonathan, the melodrama is not going to have any kind of a quick resolution.
No, it won't. And it, you know, it's just as the Rockets have discovered, it's a tough fit because he would seem to have the skills to be a catch-and-shoot guy, but that really didn't work out. He needs the ball in his hands to be his best. A team like the Sixers, where you have other guys, you want the ball in their hands. The Lakers, you want the ball in LeBron's hands, Rondo's hands, eventually, when he's back.
One of those hands has to cover from a broken bone.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be a while, but they're not getting Melo for winning games in December. You know, you're getting games, thinking of later. You want the ball, you want other people handling the ball. In fact, you know, Michael Beasley and Melo, you know, they already have him. So you got to find a place where you can give him a little room to be who he is, to go get his own shot and not rely on someone else to do it. Although, as you point out with the Sixers, you do want a line of defense behind him. You don't want to be switching him often and then having some Donovan Mitchell go blur by him. So it's a tough fit, and that's why there's not right now a lot of teams saying, yeah, we want him. That's why they're still looking.
Mm-hmm. And I'm joined by Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle. You can follow him on Twitter. It's Jonathan Long-Fagan, F-E-I-G-E-N. And like I said, he's been covering the Houston Rockets for the Houston Chronicle for a long, long time. And Jonathan, you have a book out. It's published by Triumph, and it's called 100 Things Rockets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. You can buy that on triumphs.com. You can buy it on amazon.com. You can buy it at a Barnes & Noble. But give us a couple of the things that are in the book that Rockets fans should know before they die. I've spent a lot of time down there myself, and it's an interesting franchise. But you take it from there.
Well, I appreciate you bringing it up. It was fun to do. It's part of the series around the country, different teams. Some of the things that have gotten the most reaction, a lot of people weren't familiar with the Rockets' origins in Houston when they were an experiment. They were barnstorming around the state trying to sort of lay roots for professional basketball in Texas. Can this work? So they were playing home games in Waco and El Paso and San Antonio and all over Houston because no one knew then, can basketball work in Texas? Which now, between the Rockets, Spurs, and Mavericks, seems such an anachronism. But that really was the mentality when they moved from San Diego. And they moved in large part because they had, to Houston, because they had Elvin Hayes. And there was a thought, well, he can make it work in Houston. Or for that matter, the new owner of the Rockets, Tillman Fertitta, grew up a Rocket fan. When he was 9 years old, he became a Rockets fan, because Elvin Hayes was playing for the San Diego Rockets. And he, tried to buy the team. He just missed 25 years ago buying the team when Leslie Alexander bought him. And they had some court cases to determine if the sale would go through, and it did. And then, of course, he spent what was then the record $2.2 billion to buy them. But it goes all the way back to the San Diego Rocket years with him. And then there's some stuff about how some of the trades happened. The Harden trade, I liked that one where, Daryl Morey always thinks, first of all, he tries to make every trade you can imagine. He's always got a hand in every possibility. But he's also incredibly pessimistic. He's always the guy saying, it's not going to happen. We're not going to get it done. On that one, Gerson Rosas, the vice president, Rockets vice president, works with Morey, sent Daryl a text and said, this is the one, we're going to get Harden. And, of course, it did happen later that night. And even that one goes back to the Rockets' pursuit of Dwight Howard, where they didn't get Howard at the trade deadline, and they really thought they had a chance. That was when Dwight was going back and forth, I'm going to opt out, I'm going to stay in. That whole thing was going on right up until the press conference that they had in Orlando. The Rockets were on the phone. They thought they might get him. When the next summer came along, they realized they're better off with a first-round pick as the key to getting a deal for Dwight, traded Kyle Lowry to Toronto, got the first-round pick, but in the end, Orlando picked a different three-team deal because they preferred Aaron Aflalo to Kevin Martin as the guy who would come with that deal. So the Rockets still had the first-round pick and Kevin Martin. Well, those were the pieces that made it possible to trade for James Harden.
And you've covered hundreds and hundreds of players who have come through that organization. Who's the craziest guy you ever covered, and tell me why?
Craziest?
There's crazy guys come through Houston all the time, man. One of them was me last week.
I hadn't thought of crazy. I've been asked, all kinds of different ones. I mean, obviously, in his own way, Charles said crazy things. So having Charles Barkley here, when I first started as the beat guy, I covered them with Eddie Sefko. Eddie was the beat guy. I covered them in the mid-90s when they won the championships. But years later, when I was the beat guy and Charles was here, I mean, that was fun stuff. There's nothing like covering Charles Barkley. Where we used to always joke, he's just preparing for his television career. Although we thought at the time, NBC, I even told him one day, you're not going to TNT. You're not going to go do that. You're going to be on NBC every weekend. And then, that shows you what I know. Whatever happened to that guy anyway?
Yeah, he did end up on TNT, and he sort of got away with murder or something close to it. You know, he threw a guy through a bar window at in Orlando one night, and they asked him, Charles, do you have any regrets about throwing a guy through the window at the bar? He says, yeah, I regret I wasn't on the third floor.
Yeah, that was one of the great lines. I was going to bring that one up, and you beat me to it. When they came back from the lockout year, and they were playing back-to-back-to-back games, you know, to squeeze in a schedule, and he said, I don't even want to have sex three nights in a row. Well, not good sex.
When I was coming up, he got me, and I don't know if he got me or not, because he might have had this in mind, but he said, I'm gonna run for governor of Alabama. I'm going to do it. When I'm done playing basketball, I'm running for governor of Alabama, and I'm going to run as a Republican, and I'm going to be the governor of Alabama. And I wrote it. I wrote it for the Associated Press, and it got a lot of traction. And I think there was a part of Charles that said, you know what, I'm really going to do this. But there's a part of me that says, nah, he knew I was pretty green. I was green as a cucumber back in those days, and he played me a little bit. But either way, it made for a good story, and I wouldn't count Charles out as a politician somewhere going down the road, because Charles, as kooky as he is, he does have an innate ability to make everybody laugh. And guys that can make you laugh.
He's a great comedian.
Yeah. Those kind of guys keep you going.
You know, the comedian comic thing where on TNT, that's what they got going, where Shaq says things funny and Charles says funny things. You know, it's why maybe they work well together, because Shaq is a performer, while Charles is clever and quick. The things he thinks of to say, you know, even like your reporting of him running for governor, where his follow-up to that was his grandmother said, Charles, only rich people are Republicans. And he said, Grandma, I am. You know,
yeah, there's not many like him, but let's turn back to your team, the Rockets. Right now they're only 7-7, and there's four teams at 7-7, the Spurs, the Jazz, who are really confounding a lot of people because they're taking some bad losses, the Pelicans and the Rockets, and then right underneath is the Mavericks and the Wolves. But all these teams are sitting at spot number 9 and lower, so they're out of the playoffs right now. Of course, it's only November, and what the standings look like now and what they're going to look like in April are two completely different things. But give us a little bit of an autopsy of the first 14 games with the Rockets. What's going well? What's not going well? You know, when we were down together in San Antonio, Chris Paul was saying, I've missed 14 of my last 15 layups. I don't know what's up with that. But what are you seeing from them that's good, and what are you seeing that's bad?
Well, offensively, they're still shaky. You know, they started the year terrible defensively. And they addressed that. You know, when they were 1-5, they were the 25th ranked defense in the NBA. In the 8 games since, they're the 7th ranked defense in the NBA. Ever since Chris Paul's little timeout talking to in Brooklyn, where he huddled the team around him, told the coaches to stay out, and basically said, among other things, I can't repeat, enough is enough. They've been really good defensively. In the games since then, they're allowing the fewest points in the league by 6 per game. And a part of that is because they play at such an incredibly slow pace, but defensively, they really turned it around. Offensively, they're showing signs of coming out of it. They had a very good game in Denver earlier this week on Tuesday. They had a great half against the Pacers, but it was still just a half. And then last night, pretty dreadful first half, and then got some things going in the second half against the Warriors. So the offense is still fragile. It's not all the way back. Eric Gordon still hasn't found his shot, and he's hugely important to what the Rockets do. You know, James Harden hasn't entirely found his shot yet, although he did have the 40-point game against the Pacers. But it's coming around. Defensively, they've gotten to be pretty solid. You know, playing Gary Clark significant minutes makes a big difference. You go from a liability to a strength at that position. Playing P.J. Tucker way too many minutes, but he is really good defensively. They're a good, solid defensive team. They have a ways to go in what had always been thought to be their strength offensively. I'm not sure they're out of the woods yet. I wouldn't be surprised if for the next 2-3 weeks, even though the schedule does get a little better, coming up for them a little better, if there's going to be some ups and downs too.
Mm-hmm. They're only averaging 103.5 points per game, and that's the third worst in the conference. Memphis is at 102.9, and Phoenix sitting down there at 3-11. They're at 102.2, and when you think of a Mike D'Antoni coach team, you think, oh, offense, offense, offense. But it, you know, everybody's playing Mike D'Antoni basketball now. The Pelicans are scoring 117 a game. The Warriors, we know what they're made of. They're at 118 points per game. You think the rest of the league has kind of adapted to Mike D'Antoni's style of play, and what Mike D'Antoni was doing in the 7 seconds or less days with the Phoenix Suns has now become mainstream?
Well, it's going beyond, way beyond that. The pace that those Suns played at would be 27th, 28th in the league right now. I mean, those super fast Suns teams would now be considered super slow, which is what the Rockets are right now. The Rockets really do need to pick up their pace. D'Antoni always believed and argued, you play at the pace that the point guard sets, whatever is right for your point guard. Well, Chris Paul and James Harden always liked looking things over. They'll pass it ahead, but other than that, they're going to look things over and take their time. And then the Rockets' pace is always going to be a little slower because against switching defenses, they go one-on-one, which means James Harden dribbled 23 times, which slows your pace down. So,
well, he can dribble 23 times in 12 seconds, so go ahead.
Well,
go
that's
ahead.
True, but 12 seconds is not 7 seconds, you know. And so it right now they're 29th in pace in the NBA. And they do it is a little misleading, but they do need to pick that up. You know, for one thing, you know, you hear more about Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute than the guy who starts at the position they used to play here, James Ennis. It's a strange thing. He shouldn't be hard to find. They shout his name out when the teams are introduced before games, and yet no one seems to acknowledge that the Rockets have a starting three. He played very well last night, but the Rockets could get more out of him if they would push the pace more. He's really a fast-playing player. He's a fast athlete, but he plays at a high pace. They need to do that more for that reason. But getting back to your question, has the NBA adopted to that? Yeah, everybody plays a version or have been influenced by what D'Antoni brought back to the league, the pace and space and three-point shooting. The Rockets still take more threes than anybody. They need to get back, though, to doing some of that, the pace part of the pace and space. It's not so much that teams have adjusted. Teams are switching more, but obviously Harden and Paul are built to take advantage of that. But I do think they do need to add the pace to the pace and space style.
Yeah, the Rockets right now are sitting at 6-1 to win the Western Conference. And those are kind of long odds for a team that was one win away from going to the NBA Finals last year. Right now they're at 10-1 to win the NBA Finals. And that gives me an opportunity to plug the guys that are paying the bills for this show. This show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but the guys who are backing us are called BetDSI.com. They're one of the world's largest offshores out of San Jose, Costa Rica. Good place to wager if you like wagering. And if you go there and you use bonus code BBALL1000, it's all capital letters, BBALL1000, they'll match up to $1,000. U.S. If you're listening overseas, you got to go to betdsi.eu. Same bonus code BBALL1000, and they'll match it up to whatever your currency is and the equivalent of a thousand U.S. dollars. And let's look at some of these odds, Jonathan, because the Rockets are 10-1 to win the championship. That's not a bad prop bet at this point, even given the 7-7 record. Right now, Golden State is a prohibitive favorite, and the two teams in the East that are neck and neck as the favorites are Toronto and Boston.
I thought to myself when you were telling us the odds that I thought those were pretty good odds. That you know that I thought the Rockets would be a longer shot just because teams in the East don't have to play the Warriors to get to the finals. You know, so I really thought what was 6-1 to get to the finals.
No, 6-1 to win. To win the conference. Exactly. Yes.
Well, yeah, I thought it was tougher than that. not just because of the start, just because of sort of the historic nature of the Warriors. And I don't think, I mean, you would tell me if the odds have changed, but I would not think the Warriors to do this week really would change the odds very much. They're still the Warriors.
Yeah, they're minus 450 right now to win the West, which means you'd have to bet $450 to win $100. Even with Steph Curry on this Texas trip missing all three games, and even with the, you know, the histrionics going on between Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, I think the books are saying, look, that's all going to blow over. And, you know, we'll see. That team does have DeMarcus Cousins sitting on the sidelines. He could be an immense playoff factor, and they don't really need to bring him back until the playoffs. When you're coming off a torn Achilles, it's probably best to wait and wait and wait and wait. They'll need him in April. They may need him in April. They may not. They're so good. But yeah, the Warriors are still huge favorites. And I want to read you a couple other Western Conference lines because there's a few that are really interesting. This is just to win the West. The Lakers are at plus 850, which is 8.5 to 1. The Timberwolves are at 170 to 1. The Pelicans are at 35 to 1. And then here's an interesting one. Oklahoma City, 20 to 1. And obviously they're not the team that they're going to be later in the season because Russell Westbrook is out with a sprained ankle. They're only playing two games this week, and he's sitting them out. But what are your thoughts on the Thunder and their chances of coming out of the West? Paul George is lighting it up. And, you know, when they get Andre Roberson back, they're an entirely different team defensively. What are your thoughts on that, Jonathan?
Well, they've been really good defensively this year. I think they're a legitimate threat because of that. They're number two rated defense in the NBA right now. And, you know, that's with their best defensive player. We don't know that he will be that again this year because he's got a long road back to get to his level defensively. But they're number two in the NBA, and they started pretty badly. So they're defending really well. As you mentioned, Paul George playing well. That is definitely a team to watch. I mean, they're 9-5 after the 0-4 start. You know, Steven Adams could be, there's an argument to be made, most underrated player in the NBA. You know, it's popular now to say Drew Holiday, but if you say it enough, he's not underrated. You know, there was a time Mitch Richmond sort of had that. Most underrated player. Well, you can't say it every hour and have the guy still be underrated. You just rated him. But Steven Adams, he is an absolute force. He messes up defenses just because of what it takes to keep him off the boards. That is a really good, solid team. And once Russ comes back, you know, they're doing this right now without him. Once he comes back, that's two legitimate all-NBA-level players along with one of the best centers in the league.
Yeah, he took apart DeAndre Ayton the other night, got in his head too. But another interesting line is right now second place in the conference is Portland. They're at 10-4, and you know CJ McCollum, maybe that guy is the most underrated player in the league. But Portland's at 55-1 to come out of the West. What are your thoughts on that number?
You know, they're always going to be real good. Stotts does a great job, but you know, I'm not surprised by that number because I don't see what they've done. They're better than they were. And part of that is Zach Collins was a rookie last year, and he is a real contributor this year, a way better defensive big than most second-year players, especially guys with 1 year of college. He's way better defensively than guys at his stage normally would be. But does that get you through the playoffs? You know, I'm not sure I'm ready to believe in them yet. So I guess others agree because those are longer odds than a team that's winning the way they are and that wins year after year the way they do. Those are kind of long odds, but I can understand that. I'm not sure I'm ready to buy into them as a team to make a long playoff run.
Yeah, the West is tough, and they're sitting at 105-1 to win the title. And the West is just brutal. You know, there's 10-11 really good teams, which means three good ones are going to miss the playoffs. The East, eight teams have to make the playoffs. And, you know, one of these days, I think the NBA will come to its senses and say, you know what, we're just going to take the best 16 irrespective of conference and we're going to match them up. These guys fly on charters. They always make the excuse that, oh, it's that's a real burden travel-wise. But when you're traveling on a charter, and you're being served shrimp cocktail, it's not really that bad of a flight. You know, you fly that way all the time, Jonathan, of course, first class, right?
No. Definitely not shrimp cocktail. You know, people do think that we do, though. They think that we're on the team charters because we always end up showing up in the city that the team is in. And that's not how it goes. There are a couple beat writers, I think, around the country who do fly on the charter.
Yeah, Eddie's one of them. No. Eddie Sefko does that with the Mavericks.
Now, I'm sure the Dallas Morning News pays to have him there. It's not gratis, but it is a different lifestyle, I think.
Yeah, they're going through TSA, but it's not the same TSA that everybody else goes through at the airports. And so, Jonathan, I'm gonna start to wrap here, but I want to go back to your book. Again, it's 100 Things Rockets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, and it's published by Triumph. It's available on triumph.com, on amazon.com, at Barnes & Noble, or at any local bookstore. And, you know, go ahead and buy it, especially if you're a Rockets fan. It'll make a nice Christmas present. What's kind of your favorite story out of your book?
In a lot of ways, Rudy T, because he spans so many different parts of Rockets history. They're coming to Texas as an unknown. Will they make it in Texas at all? His playing career, which was a really good one, the punch, the Kermit Washington, where he nearly died in the hospital that night. Mm-hmm. And then him becoming the head coach because Carol Dawson said to him, look, if you don't take this job, Rudy didn't want to be the head coach. He was an assistant coach. He did not want to be. He said, if you don't take the job, we're all out. I'll help you. I'll get you there. And the two of them deciding that day, all right, I'll do it. I'll take it. And then all he did, and there were a lot of things. Like some of these stories are well known to Rocket fans. But how they went from Choke City to Clutch City, which is actually a different chapter than the Rudy T chapter, but he's on the plane thinking, oh, my gosh, this is what I'm going to be known for, Choke City. That, you know, in those days, headlines in the paper were everything, and they were giant headlines in both Houston papers, Choke City. And it was a reference to Houston history, not just the Rockets' loss to the Suns, but you know, the Oilers and U of H and all these others, the Astros. But he just saw that headline, and he came up with the idea on the plane. When he gets to Phoenix, he's going to show the Rockets players the video, not of what they did to blow the lead in the fourth quarter and go down 0-2 in the series. I'm going to show them how they built the lead because they're so down. This will bring them up. It will show we can beat this team because we were beating this team. And it worked. It turned around the series, turned around Rockets history. They go on to win two championships. And he thought of that on the plane. And it was interesting to me that he decided, I'm not going to show how we blew it. They know that. They're living that. There is some good coaching because Rudy understood people, always did. You know, and that was him sitting on the plane with the giant headlines staring at him. So you know what the other one said? Again, kind of well-known, but Yao Ming's story, as you know, the incredible pressure that was on him to represent the most populous nation in the world and its relative outreach to the West, which was then new, that, okay, we're going to be more open to the West, we're going to have relationships in the West, and we're going to send this guy as a representative of all of that. And he knew it. He wasn't just, hey, I'm just about basketball. No, he knew what was on his shoulders. And you know, he loves telling the story about watching the 94 NBA Finals, the first time he'd ever seen the NBA live in China. And everybody, all of his friends and teammates, were rooting for the Knicks in the 94 Finals. So he decided, okay, I'll root for the Rockets. And he rooted for Hakeem. He always thought of himself as a Rockets fan. And then he not only makes his career in Houston, when he made it to the Hall of Fame, the announcement was made in Houston. And he loves that story. He loves that, as he says, it was destiny.
Yeah, I remember covering the first Yao Shaq matchup. I was with the AP at the time, and it was a special time in the NBA, and made a lot of friends. Colin Pine, who you know, Yao's translator, I think he's now working for NBA China, or he's working for one of his there's a fantastic guy. You know, there's a ton of great Rocket stories to tell. And I thank you for coming on. Go ahead.
A good Yao joke, because Yao was a very funny man. And you mentioning Colin made me think of it. We're in Minnesota. I found out the team had a players-only meeting. I wait till Yao's alone in the locker room, and I asked him what was about. He looks both ways, sees the room is empty, leans far forward away from Colin so Colin couldn't hear, and in the clearest voice he could possibly put together said, "I don't know. I don't speak English." That was Yao.
Yao had an extraordinary sense of humor, and Yao's running the Chinese Basketball Federation now. He's got his former point guard Li Nan as the head coach. And watch that China team. There's a kid down at Penn that I wrote about, Michael Wong, who's going to be on the Chinese national team. And there's a whole bunch of Chinese players that have been put into U.S. high school programs and have become Americanized. Michael's one of them. He's at the Wharton School of Business. He's playing for Penn, and he's going to be a four-year starter in the Ivy League. If he can put some muscle on, he could be an NBA player. But that kid's got to hit the weight room. And the World Cup in China is coming up next summer, and that's going to be a showcase. They're going to want to compete. But we got to make it a wrap now. Thanks to Jonathan Fagan from the Houston Chronicle for joining us on the show. His Twitter is at Jonathan Long-Fagan, which is F-E-I-G-E-N. My Twitter is Sheridan Hoops. Jonathan, I still got you beating followers, but I think you're closing in on me pretty quickly. And again,
no, you're big time now.
Hey, man, you know, I've been around the block a few times. And again, Jonathan's book is 100 Things Rockets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. You can buy it on Triumph.com or Amazon.com, or you can go mom and pop, which is what I like to do, and buy it at a bookstore. And again, it'll make an if you're in Texas and you got relatives who like the Rockets. So again, this show lives on GetMoreSports.com. We're sponsored by BetDSI.com. And again, go there and use the bonus code BBALL1000, B-B-A-L-L, all capital letters, 1000. And they'll match you up to $1,000 US. If you're overseas, again, it's betdsi.eu. And with that, we're going to make it a wrap. Jonathan, a pleasure having you on the show. It was good seeing you last weekend in San Antonio. And thanks for the insight on Carmelo Anthony. It looks like the latest melodrama, is not going to have a resolution anytime soon. And with that,
Jordan,
we're over. Yep. With that, we're over and done.